Welcome to podtech.net. This is John Furrier with the Fresh Voices program. We're here with Robert Thomas, the CEO of Infoblox. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, John.
Infoblox is a company. Is your investors a Sequoia Capital?
Yeah, Sequoia Capital and Lehman Brothers are the two major investors.
Yeah, big names. I mean, big venture capitalists. You guys have some serious founders here. I see you're in the DNS identity space. You guys are rooted into the core infrastructure of the internet. I think Cricket wrote a book about, I think he wrote the book on DNS.
Correct, that's
he
right.
wrote the book.
He is the book.
He is the book. Books don't get much royalties these days, but he's building a business with you. Your business, Infoblox, is a growing business. You guys are growing great. What are you guys doing these days? Give us the 20-mile stare on your business and what you're up to.
Well, you know, I think when you think about DNS and DHCP, it's boring stuff, right? I mean, it's not the most exciting thing in the world. But if you think about every network in the world, it's embedded in it. It's kind of the forgotten infrastructure of the network. Everyone's got DNS, everyone's got DHCP. You can't run a network without IP addresses. You can't get to a site without name resolution, so you've got to go to a DNS server. And it's one of those parts of the network that we think the world uses and has forgotten and is just starting to realize that it's probably the most vulnerable piece of their networking infrastructure today. You know, if a DNS server goes down, what happens? Well, mail goes down, applications go down, no one can get to you from the outside. It's critical. So it's probably that last piece of networking infrastructure that needs to be hardened and secured and made easy to manage. And that's what we do. We take DNS and DHCP today and make it, we harden it, we make it secure, we make it easy to manage, we make it easy to propagate.
DNS stands for the domain name system. For all the folks out there who aren't super techies, it's really the network phone book that maps basically the addresses of all the computers that are out there. And you know, everyone's got internet connections these days, so no one really might not know that DNS is basically runs the internet. And DHCP stands for Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol. Most people know it because they have to configure it on their browser. If they're a Windows XP user, it's like enable DHCP. They've seen the word. But this is serious stuff. It runs the computer networks that are all out there. And it's really an old technology, established as a monopoly from the U.S. government, and then domain names people bought for their companies. But it's changed. How has the DNS changed? And you guys are making a business out of it. Obviously, DNS enabled people to put up web pages. Yeah, built Yahoo, eBay, Amazon, and it wasn't for HTTP, the protocol for web pages and surfing the web, it wouldn't exist. But the world's changing. People are having relationships with IMing each other and different consumption patterns. So talk about where DNS is changing and where it's coming from and where it's going.
Well, you know, it's not only DNS that is changing too. You're right. I mean, you can't get to anywhere on the web or internally actually because people use external DNS servers to go and access stuff outside the web. They use a lot of internal DNS servers too to do their own applications internally, run intranets, run applications internally. So the way DNS has changed over time is it's not just an access to the outside world, it's also access to the inside world, and it's a fundamental part of the network. But DHCP, you know, this thing that gives your computer an address when you plug into the wall has changed dramatically too. I mean, all networks or major networks today are internet protocol based, IP based. You can't go anywhere on an IP network without an address. How does the world know what your computer's address is and how to send you data, and how do they know how to speak to you? They get an IP address. So it's changed dramatically when IP networks became the norm rather than ATM or other kind of networks. The other thing is that everything has an IP address today. The PDA you carry around has an IP address. I think the city of Portland is giving every parking meter in the entire city an IP address. They're connecting every parking meter to the internet so that they can electronically monitor what that parking meter is doing, how much cash is in it.
Our kids are going to have IP addresses.
Yeah, kids will have multiple IP addresses. They'll carry around all kinds of devices that are connected. They'll download music on their MP3s. They download them on phones today. All that stuff has IP addresses. So how do you manage all this stuff? Because you can't give someone 5 IP addresses and say, these are your numbers for life. Just use these on the devices. These things are static. These things are dynamic. So whenever
you need rules.
Yeah, they need rules, and you need to know how to allocate them. You need to know where they've been. So when you plug a PC into the wall, or when someone turns on a network-enabled MP3 device in the network out there, someone gives it an address to start with. You don't have the same address all the time. So you've got to manage these massive pool of addresses. You've got to know where they've been. You've got to know who used them. If you're a public company and your network gets breached, you've got to work out what IP address was used when it was breached and what the history of that IP address was. Who had it before this guy? Who had it after him? The whole world has changed when IP networks replaced.
It's so boring, but it's so complicated, but it really runs things. I mean, if you think about it, it's like a street. Imagine the roads not having any rules.
Yeah.
In a way, you have to have this base infrastructure.
Yeah, and it's become much more important. One of our biggest customers is Boeing. And the problem they had was they had this huge variety of devices they wanted to connect to their network. PDAs that people carried around, factory floor terminals, wireless devices in factories. They have a legion of contractors who come in and do things for them. You know, do a design of something, and the guy's there for 3 months. He's got to plug into their network. They've got to give him an ability to plug in. They want to know what he's doing, so they have to know what IP address he's doing and what he's doing. They have suppliers who come along, and they have a just-in-time system. So suppliers log into the Boeing network and work out there out of buttons for armrests or something. So he has to log into the network and deliver that. They have Singapore Airlines logs in and says, what's the status of my A380 that you're building, and are you on schedule or not? They got this massive group of people and devices all connecting to their network, and they have to control them. They have to know where they're going.
Who they are.
Who they are, where they came from, what
they're privileges doing, they have access
to.
Not every employee is going to have access to the CFO data that the CFO has. And so there's this privileges, and all this stuff got to be tracked.
And the IP address is the thing you start with when you connect someone. You can't connect to the network without it, so it's the starting point for tracking and controlling all of that.
Let's talk about that. So really, you know, most people look at DNS and, you know, they don't understand it, but for the most part, fundamentally, there's home and work. At home, at my house, I live in Palo Alto, California. I got 4 kids, two adults, that's 6 people. We have 8 computers, and now Tebow's connected. So, yep. You know, that's a hassle. But corporations, they have, you know, thousands of employees. They have a lot of different computers.
Hundreds of thousands of IP addresses.
I know it's trouble for the home people. Most people talk about how frustrating that could be on the home. It's getting easier and better. But talk about, you know, how hard it is for a big corporation. Because DNS is kind of an old technology, fundamentally. It wasn't built to have parking meters and things of that nature that I understand. And talk about an enterprise. You know, what's going through the mind of the folks that are managing this stuff? What do they do? What are they doing? And what solutions are they looking for?
Well, I think the first thing that goes through their mind is it's a nightmare. Because, you know, today, if we've got an outward-facing world, I have, you know, Sun servers running open-source software called Bind. And that's what my DNS solution is. And then inside the organization, I have, you know, lots of servers, and I have free stuff from Microsoft. Well, Microsoft is a great company, but they don't build the most secure products, and they don't build the most manageable products. So the first thing that goes through people's minds as their networks expand and they add a lot of stuff to it is this stuff is a nightmare to manage. The second thing that goes through, and everything's different. The box facing the internet with DNS on it is a different box from the ones inside the internet. The software on it is different, so I've got all these different boxes I need to manage. They're all servers running operating systems and software, so every time there's a security alert with Microsoft something or other, I have to go to all these boxes inside my network, I have to patch the operating system, I have to reinstall this stuff. It's a nightmare to manage all that. And the other thing that that people face is it's insecure. You know, open source code like Bind sitting on your internet-facing servers is the most easily hackable thing in the world.
You guys got to get to that secure. So open source means that everyone has the source code, which that means that the bad guys have the source code.
Bad guys know
so
how to get
into it.
So
they know how to get in all the back doors. How do you...
One of the biggest problems today for DNS is denial of DNS service attacks. Yes. People are getting that all the time. So what do you do? I mean, we think...
Denial of service attack, meaning they come in, they hit the ports, they sneak in, they attack a computer and secure it and either trade it for hacker currency or exploit it.
Or overwhelm it to such an extent with traffic and data that it goes down and can't be used.
Yeah.
So how
is... Which is a nightmare for a corporation because credit card numbers can go out, confidential information, I mean, it's a complete nightmare.
So how do you fix that? Well, you know, the way it's been solved in other parts of...
Get the guy who wrote the book and write patches so that the bad guys can't do it, right?
Can't do it, or shoot all the bad guys, but there aren't enough bullets to do that, or enough guns. So, you know, the way that people have done that with other parts of networking infrastructure is built a secure, hardened system, usually called an appliance, you know, an appliance to do that. So replace a general-purpose server with software that you have to maintain and look after day and patch and upgrade and all the rest of it, with really... a closed system, a box that you buy that's hardened, that has an operating system inside that no one can get to, that you never need to patch and upgrade, software inside that box you never need to install on an operating system because it comes as a package, and the ability to plug these things, these DNS servers, for the first time into a network of DNS servers, which we call a grid, and manage that network. So now, instead of managing, you know, let's take DiscoverCard, who's a customer, they have something like 10 or 15 external-facing DNS servers, and they have 100 or 200 internal DNS servers. In the old days, they would touch every one of those machines to upgrade the software, touch every one of those machines with a security patch if it happened. Today, by the
end, for managing them and keeping them up to date.
Yeah. Today, by having an Infoblox solution and a grid of DNS appliances rather than a morass of servers running software, they can manage all those boxes from a simple console centrally. They never have to
upgrade. They push the updates out, right?
One button upgrades every box on the network. All the data that changes dynamically on one box is dynamically changed on other boxes. They never have a security alert where they have to go and patch an operating system, because our operating system is cloaked. And when you upgrade software, you upgrade a single binary image. You know, one image of software, not operating system and other software, but one image. 5 or 6 seconds, push a button.
Let's talk about that because, I mean, most people that understand the DNS world is really don't understand that above DNS is all these applications that run businesses. So, you know, they could have all the security in the world on the applications, but if there's a little weakness on the DNS, it's all for naught. How are you guys looking at that? And what's, I mean, it's a zero tolerance environment. DNS runs things.
Yeah.
It's not a nice to have. You need to have this.
But you don't have a network unless you have DNS.
Exactly. So it's not like a nice to have feature to have an up and running network.
Yeah.
How are you guys looking at that and looking at the applications that sit on top of you? Do you guys have an interface into that, or are you guys solutions underneath the applications?
Well, you know, we're really part of the networking infrastructure. So we don't care what applications run on the front, on the top, and you know, people need to do what they need to do to secure the application.
So you're agnostic. Corporations, you don't say, well, we can't do business with you because you have these applications.
We don't care what the applications are. We don't care whether what the infrastructure is, whether it's Cisco switches or Juniper routers or Cisco routers. We are an embedded part of the networking infrastructure. DNS and DHCP are protocols that everyone understands, and they're standard. So no one has different DNS in this organization versus that organization. So we're just an embedded part of the infrastructure that really is part of that forward-facing line to the outside network. Just as a firewall would sit on the edge of an organization to protect people, the DNS capability that sits next to the firewall has to be able to protect people from bad activity too. So we're a part of the networking infrastructure, and we're agnostic to everything else.
And so what you're saying too is that DNS has evolved from, you know, these servers that have these addresses on them that would run things, run the plumbing of traffic and stuff, to now evolving it with the growth of the internet, kind of a, you know, internet 2.0 growth as a grid.
Yes.
And a managed grid, if you will.
Yeah. And because of all the complexity. You know, it was okay when companies were smaller to maintain a few servers with DNS. Now it's not. And many things have taken this path. You know, in the old days, routing software used to be run on VAX, VMS, and digital boxes and Sun boxes. Switching software used to be run on Sun servers. And it was okay when you had one switch in the network and one router in the network. Now, because of the way people design their networks, they have multiple routers and hundreds of switches. So what happened in that environment? No one went to hundreds of Sun boxes and hundreds of VAX. Well, VAX is out of business. Ken Olson did a great job. What happened was someone developed an appliance that was more easily managed, much more secure, and more easily deployed to cover those pieces of networking infrastructure that got more complex and proliferated as networks proliferated. And it's exactly the same story on the DNS DHCP side of the world.
And you're hardening it. So that brings us to the next question, you know, DNS. And the people in the DNS world all talk about identity, you know, in the sense of, you know, you have a name and an address, they map to each other and they can connect, and there's authenticity, this, you know, it's reliable and it actually works.
Yeah.
Where is the identity business? You guys are talking a lot about this at Infoblox. Identity is always a hot topic, depending on who you talk to, at the application level, the network level. Where's identity going these days?
So you know, we're lucky that we have two enormous opportunities in the market. One is a very tactical opportunity. We wrote this little web crawler that went out and counted all the external-facing DNS servers in the world. And it came back with 7.3 million DNS servers facing the internet in the world. And when we kind of stripped that data away a bit and pulled out all the things that pretended to be DNS and weren't, like some
honeypots.
Yeah, honeypots and cable modems.
Yeah.
It turns out there's about 4 million external-facing DNS servers in the world. And if you look at most organizations, they have 3 or 4 times that number inside the organization. So there's around 20 million servers in the world running DNS and DHCP software. So we have this big tactical opportunity to go and convert all that into appliances. No one else is really doing it, so there's a massive tactical opportunity to do that. But the more strategic opportunity for us is the area you just mentioned in identity management and network identity management. There are so many pieces of identity when you log into a network. There's DNS that helps you get around the network and go to yahoo.com or wherever. There's the IP address that identifies your computer. There's RADIUS, which authenticates you logging on. There are directories like Active Directory and LDAP, who provide policy information about what you can do. All these things are different databases in different places managed by different people. And no one today can really manage the identity of the people that get into the
network.
They're
siloed identity, right? And that's what you're saying. I mean, it's one person can be in three different identity databases or more.
And someone can come into the network and bypass some of that stuff because there's no correlation of data between it. You know, networks, if you came and plugged into many companies' conference room Ethernet port, you could get into their network. But they don't know who you are, what you're doing. Yeah. So you know, there's kind of an anonymity around networks. You know, we call it the anonymous network.
Yeah.
And as things become more important, more applications spread more, you have to get control of the networks and you have to identify who's there. So we have this very strategic opportunity to integrate and correlate all those pieces of network identity. So you can correlate a RADIUS authentication with the IP address used, with the DNS entries that person used when they got onto the web, and where did they go.
This helps two things. Obviously, security. You want to know who the bad guys are coming in and kill anonymous, if you will, or create a guest network for that much and firewall it off. But more importantly, you mentioned about the worker on the assembly line who's getting these. They need to get access. So what you're saying is that if I have information about me and I'm moving around an organization with a wireless device, you can give me better resources because you know who I am. Because the applications are tying into it.
Better resources on where you go, depending upon the device you use and where you are, and better tracking and audit of what you've done when you get there. You know, at the end of this year, Sarbanes-Oxley is a wonderful thing for some companies. At the end of this year, every public company in the United States, under Sarbanes-Oxley by law, will have to produce an audit report if their network gets hacked that says who came in, where'd they go, how do they get in. To do that, they have to tie all these little pieces of identity data together. Like RADIUS, how did the person get authenticated or didn't they? DHCP, what IP address did they use?
Well, people got to figure out how to do it first before they actually put a report on who
broke it.
Well,
they can't. That's a great point. They can't.
I know.
The amount of work it takes.
Sorry, Cord, I can't produce a report. We don't know who's on our network.
We don't know how to do it. Without investing tens of man years of effort in writing specialized code, it's near impossible for companies today to correlate that data, IP addresses with MAC addresses, with user IDs, with RADIUS authentication, with DNS, where did you go on the web. If you can integrate all that network identity data in some way, it becomes a trivial reporting exercise. Integration is very difficult, and that's the big strategic opportunity for us. That's version 2 of our product. So a lot of tactical opportunities.
Is that available now?
The first iteration of it is available now, and it will evolve over time for the next 12, 18 months.
So this kind of plays off some of the grid stuff you were talking about. You guys have the investment of having knowledge about the devices, the DNS devices out there. You pull it all in together and kind of like a grid management. You're looking at everything, and you can push updates, and you have all this at your fingertips.
Yep.
That's essentially the solution.
Yep. And as
versus
I said,
the old way, which was, you know, sending a guy out into the closet and just, you know, terminal server in and hacking it in and doing
exactly.
Something like that, right?
Yeah. And integrate, I mean, all these different databases, LDAP databases, Active Directory databases, RADIUS databases, DNS databases, all these things are different things in different places on different boxes. If you can treat that as a big logical entity, there's a huge amount of information and security and identity information and tracking you can do.
We're here with Robert Thomas, the CEO of Infoblox, which makes great solutions for, you know, enterprises, whether they're expanding or whether it's just for security or both, in managing the DNS, which runs their internet. And internet's down, people complain, and business doesn't get done. And that's a big mission critical, not nice to have. Final question, how do you see the market evolving over the next 5 years?
Well, I think IP networks become more and more and more and more common. Many things get connected to them. You know, the Internet Protocol is really the basic network standard today. Many, many more things get connected. You know, we talked about Portland and Oregon, where they can connect every parking meter to the network with an IP address. There are companies who are doing that with intelligent cameras. You know, in London, they have cameras on every corner. When the bomb went off in one of the subways, they had all these videos of people running around streets. Well, they're going to double or triple the number of cameras they got in London. Everyone's going to have an IP address.
More devices.
And it's going to be a much more intelligent network. So over the next 5 years, there's going to be, you know, we think there's a lot of
sensor networks, Homeland Security, right? I mean, that's
locks
coming.
On doors. You know, there's a company now who's making locks on doors that are all IP addressable. So you can control the locks on the doors in the building from an application.
You can't talk to any device unless it has an address.
Exactly.
That's so fundamental.
In the next 5 years, we think we've seen an explosion of stuff today connected to the network. You know, PDAs and laptops and factory terminals and desktops. In the next 5 years, that's nothing to compare to what's going to happen in the next 5 years. The explosion of stuff that will get connected to the internet via IP addresses is just unbelievable.
So a grid fabric, are you recommending to clients and people, think about this expansion, think about the security implications, grid out, grid your network, expand it and grow it incrementally from there?
Yeah, how are you going to manage it? I mean, a lot of people manage IP addresses on spreadsheets today. Excel is the tool of management for IP addresses. You can't do that if you have 3 million
IP addresses. There's so many cells. I think a spreadsheet kind of has so many cells and then it's full.
Yeah. So I think companies got to think about, as this explosion happens and all these IP addressable things get connected, how do you manage them? How do you secure the IP addresses? Some people don't spoof IP addresses and do all kinds of things. How do you report on it? It's going to be a huge problem. So
Infoblox is right there. We're here at Robert Thomas, Infoblox Chief. Thanks for the podcast.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for talking to us.